Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to start off our free agency preview with the big fish. We're going to predict where all of them are going this summer. We're also going to talk about the NBA award show, and we'll give a quick reaction to the Kent Bazemore-Evan Turner trade. Before we get to all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. It would really help us out. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. Last night at around 2 a.m., I was up and I realized, why am I up? I don't have any interest in watching the NBA award show. Why am I up? This makes no sense. So I just went to bed.
You know, I also did that, but that's because my cable and internet was out all day yesterday. So I had no choice but to not watch the NBA awards show. And you can only scroll through Twitter for so long before even that becomes boring. So yeah, I went to bed at like 10:30 last night. It's the earliest I've gone to sleep in a long time.
Oh, man. So here's my problem with that whole thing. Not just like the spectacle of it. And honestly, I haven't watched, you know, a full show since it started. But like, I don't remember the winners as well. I think that's a pretty big drawback. Like usually, you know, an award was announced. They got a few days in the spotlight. People would talk about it. Like it would get a chance to cement that award into people's minds.
Right.
And now it's just like a shotgun thing. Oh, this guy won that. This guy won this. Okay. Bye. yeah, sure. Whatever. But on the bright side, international city, man.
Yeah. We mentioned that at the end of the regular season is when we made our award picks. And we said there's a decent chance that it's a very international flavor in this year's award. It could have been even more had Sabonis won Sixth Man of the Year and Masai Ujiri won Executive of the Year.
I mean, I love it. And I'm also loving all these very dumb tweets that past couple of hours, basically saying that the media is trying to globalize things.
Right.
Because Giannis Antetokounmpo doesn't deserve the MVP. Right.
Yeah. That's... Mm-hmm. Yeah. Luka Doncic was not the clear and runaway favorite for Rookie of the Year. Yes, right. It is anti-American bias that Trae Young, who had the literal worst DRPM of any player in the NBA this year, it is a crime that he is not Rookie of the Year. Yeah. Yes.
And of course, I mean, Rudy Gobert doesn't even play defense. So
right.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I had no problems with any of the major awards except for one. I think when we did our award picks back in April, we pretty much nailed all of these. So I don't have any beef with the international flavor in this year's crop of award winners. The only one I do have some questions about is his Executive of the Year. So John Horst of the Milwaukee Bucks won. Masai Ujiri came in fourth. That's absurd to me. I know... You could say that, yeah, sure, in retrospect, they won the title. Of course he should have won. But I'm pretty sure that when we had our awards picks in April, we either had Masai first or second, but we said it was between him and John Horst.
Yeah.
Like, Tim Connelly of the Nuggets came in second. Lawrence Frank of the Clippers came in third. I can understand Lawrence Frank because they had a great season. They traded Tobias Harris, got a hell of a lot for him. Especially considering they weren't planning on re-signing him. They stole Zubac from the Lakers, which was great. They still, you know, they went 48.
Well, that didn't take a whole lot of work. Right. Do you want him? Sure.
Yeah, but still, you know, they taking advantage of dumb management is still taking advantage of dumb management. Someone's got to make that call.
Yeah, nice save.
But they, you know, they went 48-34, stole two games off of the Warriors in the first round. Great season. I wouldn't put him above Masai, but... Fine, he deserved the top three spot, I agree. What did Tim Connelly do this season to deserve a second place nod?
Sign Isaiah Thomas.
Right? Like, that was the big move.
Yeah. No, and I mean, you basically laid it out on Twitter, I feel, and you did so with to me as well before we started recording. Like, it might be a good draft pick, Michael Porter Jr., right. Especially at 14. Like, that might present really tremendous value from last year. Mm-hmm. But he didn't play this year. And right. Since it's an annual award, you have to take into account that actual year. And Malik Beasley and Monte Morris both improved dramatically.
For sure.
But they weren't selected this year. Like, right. There weren't any decision to be made from Tim Connelly's perspective this year regarding the two.
Right.
So,
if anything, he complicated Monte Morris's breakout by signing Isaiah Thomas, and it's mm-hmm. a testament to Mike Malone that he didn't go with the veteran free agent signing. He's just like, all right, I'm going to play the best player. And Monte right. Morris is clearly more impactful. You know, I gave Isaiah a try. He had like a 9-game tryout, and it was a disaster. And we're just going to go back to Monte Morris because this season yep. is too important for us to be prioritizing feelings over who's the best player.
And like, just to clarify, like, we're not crapping on Connelly. Like, he is absolutely a terrific, terrific executive. Like, that's right. not the point. The point is it's an annual award, and you have to yeah. take in the last 12 months into account. Like, if we were going to be really harsh about it, we could even point to the Will Barton contract. Like, he didn't play as he used to play this year. Like, mm-hmm. he had a down year, yeah. and he was just given $52 million. So, if you look at it from a very, very harsh perspective, obviously you shouldn't, because the Nuggets are great and Conley's done a terrific job. But over the past 12 months, it's been kind of meh. It hasn't yeah. been great. And I think it's completely fair to just put him down on the list. Yeah.
Right. I would happily take Tim Connelly in the Sixers front office. I have nothing against the guy. I think he's done a great job building that team up. But this feels like a continuity award for him. Just, yeah. you know, the sum total of the moves he's made since drafting Jokic led to this season. And that's great. But he didn't make any blockbuster moves this season. Meanwhile, here's all that Masai Ujiri did since the end of the Raptors season last year. He fired Dwayne Casey, who went on to win Coach of the Year like a month later. He traded DeMar DeRozan, a franchise cornerstone, for Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green. Kawhi Leonard, at the time, we don't know how healthy he is. He had played mm-hmm. 9 games the previous season with this quad injury. He can leave in a year. It is a gigantic, high-risk move. He does it. At the trade deadline, he trades Jonas Valanciunas, DeLon Wright, and CJ Miles to the Memphis Grizzlies for Marc Gasol. Again, huge, you know, it took a lot of courage to make that move, because once again, Marc Gasol, like Kawhi, he could opt out, could become a free agent this summer. You could be hitting detonate on your team in 4 months at that point.
Yeah.
The moves pay off, and they win a title, but I don't need that. I don't need to look back in retrospect and say Masai deserved it. Like, that was the most bold moves any executive made in the past year were yeah. Masai Ujiri. And for making that kind of a gamble, and the fact it worked out is great, but I just think he positioned his team to go further than they ever had before. And it was obvious in mid-April, just as it is now.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I just don't get it. I hope... I mean, the good thing for him is that they won the title, and I guarantee you he doesn't yeah. give a damn about not winning Executive of the Year, because he's got a new shiny Larry O'Brien trophy to look at forever. Right. So,
but Brian, I'm confused. Are you saying that there's no nuance to NBA awards? That there are no clarification about the parameters? Well, oh my god!
Talk to Houston Rockets Twitter about that.
Yeah, wow. I haven't complained about that since 2016.
I know. Well, yeah. I will also say it's just a bad look from the Rockets. The main Twitter account, you know, the second Giannis gets announced as MVP, they go on a tweet thread about why that's great, but actually James Harden was the MVP. Like, just let the guy have it. Just
Houston has not had a great run recently.
No, it really, it's just gross. I mean, I get it. And frankly, that might be the best thing. Losing MVP might be the best thing for James Harden, because he just had this historic season in terms of scoring output. and it still didn't translate to a championship. It didn't translate to an MVP. So maybe he realizes, hey, I can't just dribble for 20 seconds and take step back threes. Maybe I do need to incorporate more motion into the offense. Maybe I do need to involve my teammates a little bit more.
Well, I mean, I think it's unfair to say that he doesn't involve his teammates to that sense. Like, he's a very willing passer. As soon as the double comes over, he swings it. And I think it's more so by design. And, you know, I think he understands, and it's almost a problem that he understands this. He understands that every single time down the court, he's the best option. Like, and so from a pure analytical perspective in his mind, his idea is, well, we have a better chance at scoring the ball at a high rate and a high efficiency if it goes through me, as opposed to Austin effing Rivers.
Right,
So I think he's trying to do it in a way where he maximizes the team's output, but I totally understand why that would frustrate virtually everyone around him. But having said that, I think he is, you know, we all know he's a tremendous passer. He led the league in assist 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2016-17.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously he's got the passing chops. It's just a matter of just adding layers into the offense, which really doesn't fall upon him. That's more of a D'Antoni issue.
Right.
And maybe Daryl Morey needs to consider that not everything has to be a three or a layup.
You know, you saying that just made me think it's somewhat akin to mid-2000s Kobe Bryant, where he just tried to do everything himself.
Mm-hmm.
And because, as you said, it, much like Harden, Kobe was the best option every time down the floor. But sometimes maximizing every single trip doesn't necessarily mean you're doing the best for your team. Like, having to involve your teammates gets them more invested in the game as well. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with the Rockets this summer. That's a whole different conversation, and maybe
that's a whole episode, really.
Yeah, maybe it changes. In a week, if they somehow Daryl Morey works his magic and they get a big name free agent somehow.
Yeah, but remember, there are no issues in Houston because Chris Paul absolutely certainly has not asked for a trade.
Correct.
Nope.
Allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly. let's go into quick Evan Turner, Kent Bazemore before we get to the free agent
stuff. Yes. I like it from both sides. I know you love it from Portland. I do too. But I think people were way too harsh on Atlanta for this. Because here's the thing. Yeah, they swapped bad contracts.
Right.
But the reason they did was because both of them solved a need. So obviously, Bazemore is a better shooter. So he'll be getting a lot of looks in Portland next season. But in Atlanta, they needed not a point guard, but they needed a play initiator. And actually, Evan Turner is going to play backup point guard next season.
Yeah.
But they were a little bit short on playmaking off the bench. So this solves a need from them as well. And I think people are just, they're looking at Atlanta as this rebuilding team, and they don't really consider, oh, they need this. Or maybe they could use some more of this or that. Like, even rebuilding teams are looking in free agency or trades to fill some needs so they can get their team running on a certain level. It might not translate to wins, but that means they can, you know, play around with the offense and maybe learn about their young players. Oh, if we have a secondary ball handler who can do X, then maybe Trae Young will respond to Y and do Z. You know, there are so many layers to it. They need a playmaking. They got playmaking. I like it from both sides.
Yes, yeah. I think the issue from the Atlanta side is just Kent Bazemore is a significantly better player than Evan Turner, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
So I figured when they revealed the, you know, Woj tweeted it out yesterday, and you would think like, okay, well, maybe Atlanta's getting a future second round pick or something. Because as you said, it's not a cap space deal. I think Turner makes $600,000 or so less than Bazemore, but it's not, neither team is saving a significant amount of money here. Part of me thinks it could just be also Bazemore didn't want to be part of a rebuild anymore, and they were just doing him a solid and like doing right by him, and they're currying favor with him and with, you know, future free agents, which is fair. I mean, if that's part of the rationale, that's good. But from a pure value perspective, I think Portland clearly got the better end of this deal.
Yeah, no, I get that. But I think even though Turner is not a guy who'll put up big numbers, and he isn't a shooter, which in today's league just kind of makes you irrelevant on some level.
Right.
I think he's the smarter player. I think he's...
Yeah, that's true.
I think he's way more confident and secure with the basketball. I think he's able to call out plays a lot better than Bass is. It seems to me Bazemore is one of those players who, you know, is performing the best when he's not in the lead. I mean, you have someone else just taking the reins and he just feeds off of them. Turner's a guy who can actually communicate, who can call out stuff, who can come in from the second unit and actually take over as an emotional leader, as a communicator. And I think that carries a lot of value in both the locker room and on the court in terms of development. Mm-hmm. So this might have been an investment from Atlanta saying, hey, you know what? Here we bring in a guy who likes to talk positively and can direct and can, you know, just delegate.
Right.
This is what we need Trey to learn. This is what we need Kevin Herter to learn and DeAndre Hunter and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are a few hidden aspects of what a player can and can't do that we as fans rarely consider. And so I kind of like it. I understand from a value perspective that maybe a second rounder would have made more sense to be included, but overall I'm fine with it. I don't think it's that bad from Atlanta as we talked about. But definitely, I mean, Portland is getting one hell of a deal here, just because they have the leader.
Yeah.
They have Dame. They have CJ.
It's just, the wing depth has been their issue for so long, with all due respect to Harkless and Al-Farouq Aminu.
Right.
And now between drafting Nasir Little at 25 last week and getting Bazemore, they just addressed their biggest weakness. The free agency hasn't even started yet.
Mm-hmm.
And they turn.
I love what they're doing.
I mean, Turner is a good player, but his value was, as you said, he works best as a backup ball handler. His value is limited in that regard because you can put both Dame and CJ in that role. So unless if you're staggering minutes for those guys, then Turner doesn't get to operate in that role as much. Portland now has a guy in Bazemore who is a significantly better three-point shooter. He's going to have a bunch of open looks. And they just gave themselves insurance on Rodney Hood, who's probably going to leave this summer in free agency.
Yeah.
I love it. I feel like I'm low on Portland every year coming into the season.
This will be
the first time that I'm not low on Portland. I'm very much all aboard. Like, they are a clear playoff team. They could fight for a top four seed. They're going to be very good this year.
And while we were talking about this fantastic Evan Turner for Kent Bazemore deal, Mark Stein of New York Times tweeted, "The Celtics, I'm told, are emerging as a stealth suitor for Charlotte Hornets free agent Kemba Walker."
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
"Boston's cap room situation is a fluid one, but the Celtics, as Danny Ainge has acknowledged, are weighing their various needs as we speak in both the backcourt, with Kyrie Irving and possibly Terry Rozier leaving, and frontcourt, with Al Horford exiting."
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting, actually.
Well, that's a good way to seg into our free agent predictions. And so the way we're going to do this, today we're going to give the big name guys, just because we'll have a few days for us to change our minds, basically. Yeah. And then later this week, we'll do a second episode, and we'll talk about some of the non-max caliber players who teams should still be going after. So the Dwayne Dedmans and the Pat Beverleys and the Danny Greens of the world, Nikola Mirotic, Bojan Bogdanovic, those kind of guys. We'll give our input on where they might make sense, how much money they should expect, so on and so forth. But the guys today, most of them, if not all of them, are going to get max contracts this summer. So,
oh God, I hope not.
I think.
Yeah.
Majority of them are.
Yep. No, I don't disagree. But there are some of these names that we're going to talk about today that really shouldn't be getting a max contract. But
That is correct. So let's start with the restricted free agents. Mort, Kristaps Porzingis. I think it's safe to say he's not going anywhere. He's getting a 5-year max from the Mavericks, right?
I wouldn't see any other way. I mean, so there are a couple days until free agency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anything has to really muck this whole thing up, it's if a development arises in the accusation. of the sexual assault case.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's been pretty quiet in that end. And we don't know what's happening. It seems like everything's being handled behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't speculate, obviously.
Right.
But if the intel on that looks promising and positive, and the Mavericks deem that contract worthy for the next 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. then yeah.
Yeah. Yep, totally agree. I think what they'll do is use their cap space first, and they'll keep Porzingis' cap hold on the books. I believe mm-hmm. he counts as $17.1 million, I want to say.
Yeah. Which is lower than what his salary would be, which Correct. Is why you wait.
Yeah, yeah. His max salary will be $27.25 million, so it's a $10 million difference.
Yeah.
With his cap hold on the books, they could still have, I believe, about $31.3 million, so not quite max room for a 7 to 9 years of experience guy, but not far off from that, and they could easily make it if they trade like Justin Jackson or something. They could get there,
right? Should we just before we go into all this, we just talked about cap hold. So basically, should we just mention here at the top that the reason that one would wait is because when a cap hold is lower than what the actual salary would be, it just makes sense to time it differently.
Yes, correct. Yes. The same will happen with the 76ers in particular if Jimmy Butler leaves and Tobias Harris stays. Tobias Harris's cap hold is $22.2 million. His max is $32.7 million, so it'll be the same deal. You know, they'll agree to a deal right away, but they won't make it official until the timing of it will be they'll use the rest of their cap space first. Then they will use their bird rights to re-sign that guy and exceed the salary cap to re-sign him.
Right. And the opposite is also true. If you have a guy who earned a ton of money the year before and stands to make significantly less the year following, you can obviously renounce him if you don't like him. But if you're very keen on having this dude stay, you would probably prioritize to re-sign him first, because then his cap hold gets replaced by his newer and then much lower salary, which would then clear more cap space.
Yep, exactly. Malcolm Brogdon. This one is less certain. I think the Bucks want to keep him, but within reason, especially given their other, you know, they have Chris Middleton, Brook Lopez, Nico Mirotic. They have a lot of guys, a lot of balls in the air right now. Where do you think the breaking point is for the Bucks in terms of where would they say no?
I have no idea. Honestly, I could come here and come with a guess, like $20 million, but I don't know, because he is such an efficient player.
Mm-hmm.
He is such a great scorer. He can handle the ball. He can play defense. He's long. And he is entering the prime of his career right now. He's 26, I want to say.
Yeah.
So I think he could cost a lot simply because what you're paying him for over the next 4 years are essentially his primary years.
Mm-hmm.
So that counts, I think, because you don't want to be the team that pays him after this contract.
Right, right, right.
This is the year, like, if you are interested in Malcolm Brogdon and you think that, you know, you'll get great bang for your buck in his prime years, that I could totally see a team trying to max him out.
Yeah.
That wouldn't shock me whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't.
Right.
But I could see it happening.
Right. Yeah, I'm not going to say I would be surprised by a Brogdon max, but just based on the teams with cap space and team need and everything, and the fact he's a restricted free agent, I think, you know, a lot of teams are reluctant to tie their cap space up for, you know, it could be up to 48 hours, and a lot of teams are reluctant to do that, especially early in free agency when a lot of other pieces are in play.
So you were saying Sean Marks is going to do that on June 30th at 6 p.m.
He's embracing the logical extreme of small ball, and he's going to start a lineup with nothing but 6'4 guys. Yeah. I know. I wish Sean Marks had... Well, he does have cap space, but I think they're eyeing a few bigger fish at the moment. So, yeah, I mean, I think ultimately Brogdon does stay with the Bucks, but, yeah, I mean, I do think a team, especially in the East, should lob a gigantic offer sheet his way just to either... I mean, there's no losing here. Either you get him And as you said, you get a guy in his prime. He shot 50, 40, 90 last season. He would fit in basically anywhere. Yep. Or and if you don't, then you just drove up the price on the Bucks and you made it harder for them to continue building around Giannis without dipping far into the luxury tax, which is also a gigantic win. If you're, you know, from a long-term team building perspective, you want to make life hell on the Bucks owners. So allowing them to keep Brogdon at like 10 to 12 million would be a disaster. Someone's got to throw at least 20 his way.
Oh, for sure. And the Bulls are very interested in his services.
Yeah.
So, of course. I mean, he's a guard who can shoot and defend. I mean, they need two-way players. You know, the national media has picked up on it. The local media has picked up on it. I've heard it privately from numerous sources as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Bulls are legitimately interested in Malcolm Brogdon. And then when they drafted Coby White, a lot of that, you know, went away, but the Bulls have maintained an interest. Like, Coby White is not going to change, you know, how they feel about Brogdon.
Right.
So I think they're sort of a dark horse candidate. Before the draft, they were looked at as, you know, one of the primary candidates. And then after Coby White, for some reason, like Coby White should change their minds. Okay.
Right.
That doesn't even make sense to me, but okay.
Yeah.
Like, now they're not even being brought up. And I think we should definitely look at Chicago. Chicago is also in a weird situation in regards to how much they can pay Brogdon,
mm-hmm.
because they have roughly $20 million, but they also are applying to the league to actually get Omer Asik's contract, or at least on the cap, voided because of his career-ending injury.
Yeah,
that would add $3 million to their cap, which means they could pay Brogdon $23 million a year.
Okay.
Which, you know, it's not a max offer, but
right.
$23 million beats $20 million any day of the week.
Yeah, and it's not far. His max is 27.25, so it's not super far off from that. Yeah, I mean, Chicago makes a lot of sense. I know the Sixers are interested if one of Jimmy or Tobias leave. Dallas could be really fun. Put him next to Luka and just go to town. I could see Indiana.
See, I like Indiana more than Dallas. Because here's the thing with Dallas, right? You're going to have so many touches go between Kristaps and Luka, where I'm wondering if Brogdon would just kind of be pigeonholed to being a spot-up guy.
Right. Probably.
Yeah. And I think if you're paying him, you know, $20 million plus, you need to get the full Malcolm Brogdon experience.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of... A lot of teams could use a Malcolm Brogdon, so I expect him to get bit up, but ultimately I expect the Bucks to keep him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, they're going to get Middleton back for sure.
Yeah.
And why not continue with Brogdon, who is like, what, their third or fourth leading scorer?
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely one of their most efficient perimeter players.
Yeah. I mean, now is just not the time to go cheap, because Giannis is 2 years away from being a restricted free agent. If you start cutting corners and cutting productive pieces because you're afraid of the luxury tax, that's going to send a very bad message
to a guy. Congratulations with the MVP, Giannis. go say bye-bye to Malcolm Brogdon.
Right. That would be a very, very bad message. The fact that they salary dumped Tony Snell suggests to me that they are thinking about this. So similar
Well, it's Tony Snell, though.
I know, but they're just like creating more cap room so they can retain their actual good players.
Oh, okay, that's what you're saying. I thought you were saying like it's an indicator of
them being cheap. No. Tony Snell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, they dumped Tony Snell so they can make more room for Brook Lopez.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. All right, I hear you.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the Snell deal, I don't think, in our draft recap, but much like you were saying earlier about cap holds, Brogdon has a super cheap cap hold because he was a second round pick. Middleton's as well is very cheap. I believe it's $19.5 million. So what the Bucks will presumably do is use their cap space first to re-sign Brook Lopez, then go over the cap, re-sign Middleton, re-sign Brogdon, call it a day. Nico, I think, is gone.
Yeah, I think so too. And honestly, I've been trying to gauge Nico's contract value, because I have some ties to his camp. Mm-hmm. And I guess some time ago, I heard that there wasn't really a whole lot of buzz about him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been very, very quiet from their end, really. So I think they're I think maybe they've connected with a team, or maybe they're just trying really hard to gather offers and understand like what his situation is.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you. I don't think he's going to be a Buck.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's too hard for them to keep all four. But by dumping Snell, they created more cap space for Brook Lopez, which otherwise they would have been limited to just ideally the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, but possibly even the taxpayer. So non-taxpayer is $9.25 million, taxpayer is $5.7 million. Either way, Lopez is getting eight-figure offers from other teams, so they had to make a little bit more room to to get a more competitive offer. So, yeah.
So while we're on the subject of the Bucks, and you just brought up Nico, like I understand market dictates contracts, but what would you say like is Nico's worth in that sense? I know that's a very difficult question because each team offers different contracts and whatnot, but like if you had to put a number on it,
I would say like low eight figures, somewhere in the 12 to $15 million range would be what I would expect for him
over the full four.
Like a 4-year $50 million or something like that,
maybe.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Seems like the Knicks are an obvious candidate there.
we'll get to the Knicks. Let's finish with the restricted free agents. For now, a restricted free agent, I should say.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Russell. So Kyrie Irving's interest in the Nets is widely reported at this point. It seems like it is somewhat of a foregone conclusion, although Zach Lowe had a piece today and Dan Devine of The Ringer had a piece yesterday about the whole Kyrie or D'Angelo debate. Basically, do you prefer Kyrie? Kyrie is a more talented player than D'Angelo Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie is also older. He'll be more expensive. His max is about $5 million more than D'Angelo. And there's the obvious chemistry concerns. And if D'Angelo does not take a max deal, you know, where's the threshold where D'Angelo at $22 million, is he more valuable than Kyrie at $32 million? Something like that. So if Kyrie does go to the Nets, it sounds like D'Angelo is gone. They will presumably let him become it. They'll renounce him, let him become an unrestricted free agent. So what do you think happens with D'Angelo Russell this summer? Because a month ago, I would not have thought him to be in play, really.
Yeah, so I actually also had a column up on my Danny's Patreon yesterday about this. Or the day before, actually. I am not a supporter of Irving necessarily going to the Nets, just because of the chemistry issues.
Yeah.
And really, what really persuaded me was the Jackie McMullen report saying that he had issues with Brad Stevens. He had issues with Danny Ainge. He had issues with virtually everyone in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
If you have issues with Brad Stevens, I kind of think it's your fault. Like this, everything we read and hear and see from Brad Stevens is that he's such an accommodating coach who's very down to earth, very very like likable and organically so. Like he's not a fake guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything, just he's on the up and up. And with Kyrie always having issues with coaches and GMs and players and whatnot, man, that team in Brooklyn has been built up through hard work, sheer determination, chemistry, cohesiveness. I don't want to rattle the boat while also having to shell out more money.
Right.
I think Irving actually ends up somewhere else, and ooh, I think Russell goes back to Brooklyn.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. You're telling me Danny Ainge's quote yesterday of, I think it just makes life more enjoyable when everybody is humble, hardworking, and will play any role they have to help the team succeed. You do have to have a certain amount of talent to win, as we all know, but good people make coming to work more fun. That doesn't make the Nets want to sign Kyrie Irving?
Oh, it makes him, makes him so appealing. No, but I mean, look, I understand the whole aspect of like the Kyrie Durant package deal thing.
Yeah.
I think the Nets are looking at it like, okay, so we get a guy in here who's a team chemistry murderer, and we get a 31-year-old guy in who just tore his Achilles.
Right.
Like, honestly, I think the Nets can do better. That sounds incredible considering I'm talking about freaking Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
Right.
I understand that. But why just gamble away the next 4 years of your future when you spend so many years coming back and actually creating a product that's immensely enjoyable and where the fan base are behind them 100%. I mean, Brooklyn fans are terrific.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, I have a feeling that right now they're just kind of swimming in this newness of, oh my God, the top tier players are actually interested in us. And now they're maybe coming back to earth a little bit and going, but is that smart? Should that decision be just made out of hand? Should we just kind of consider bringing back D'Angelo and see what we can do? And I'm leaning towards the latter.
See, I understand the chemistry concerns, but I think we might be overthinking this one. If you can get Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, you get Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, and you figure it out later. I think the Nets have a really good supporting cast right now.
Right.
Their lack of star power was exposed in the playoffs.
Agreed.
You know, Ben Simmons swallowed D'Angelo whole in that first round series. And I think there's a limit. D'Angelo Russell's a really good player. He was an all-star this past season. He doesn't draw contact. He is not as athletic as Kyrie. Yeah. I think there is a limit to how far you can go with him as your number one player. I think even if, really, I mean, if they get KD and Kyrie, KD misses the whole season, you're just basically swapping out D'Angelo for Kyrie, the Nets were still the sixth seed last year. Like, they could still be a playoff team, even with Kevin Durant recovering all of next season. And then come 2020, 2021, they're a title favorite in the East.
Mm-hmm.
So I think D'Angelo's gone. I don't know how they make it work, but I think he goes to the Suns. Their series of draft night moves we talked about last episode was completely incomprehensible. They would have to dump Tyler Johnson somewhere, probably, or dump Josh Jackson, which I don't think they would have any issues doing on their end, at least. I think they would be more than ready to move on from him.
Right.
D'Angelo and Devin Booker have been friends since high school. I think there's a lot of interest there. It sounds like Minnesota is also interested in him. Not sure.
Yeah, they're really interested, according to Lowe, I believe.
Yeah, not sure how they get the space. And maybe they just dump Jeff Teague somewhere. His market, I mean, Indiana, again, would make a lot of sense. The Lakers. It'd be so funny if he went back to the Lakers. But he should have a big market, I think. It's just...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. He's just very up in the air.
But let me... So we're going to go into the unrestricted free agents. So just remind me to make a rebuttal on the Kyrie thing.
Okay.
Because I am not there, brother.
Okay. Well, we could start with the Nets then.
All right. I appreciate it. So here's the thing. You said, get those guys and figure stuff out later.
Yeah.
If Kyrie once again butts heads with an entire organization in Brooklyn, can we agree his trade value is going to go down and his, like, he is going to be considered, you know, I hate this term, but a locker room cancer?
Yeah, probably so.
Okay. So what exactly do you figure out if you're stuck with him?
Well, he's still really talented.
Yeah, but if everyone knows, look, I don't disagree with that. Kyrie Irving, in my opinion, is an MVP caliber talent.
Yeah.
I'm never going to disagree with you on that. Like, talent-wise, Irving is, like, at the very freaking top of the league.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have the mental makeup to make your team, you know, a positive attribute going forward if you're the leading star.
But he wouldn't be the leading star. Kevin Durant would be the leading star.
So that's my second point. We don't know that. We have zero idea in terms of how Durant comes back. That is a huge gamble. And he would absolutely, because of that injury, demand 4 years. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that he wouldn't.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, so if you lock up Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant for 4 years, like, here's the nightmare scenario. Durant returns and is never the same player again.
Right.
Kyrie Irving goes on some egomaniac BS trip and like says now that the earth is a cube or whatever.
Right.
And like, look, I'm just saying I can see this going really bad.
Oh, yeah.
Really quickly. Yeah. And I think when we are all sitting here asking ourselves this question, are we overthinking it? No. I absolutely think that's the wrong question to say, because I think the Nets should absolutely be considering every single angle of this before they pull the trigger. And thankfully, Sean Marks is smart. Yep. Kenny Atkinson is smart. And I think they will bring their entire team together, lock the doors in that room, and then just go, should we do it?
Right.
And then hash it out on like 5 or 6 hours straight.
Right.
And figure out what's best for him. But honestly, if I'm the Nets, as much as I would want to, like, the idea of Irving and Durant on my team, I can just see it go bad so damn quickly, and then you're stuck for 4 years. Like, they've just been stuck for more than 4 years. They can't afford to do that again.
But so what's the alternative? If you keep D'Angelo, you still have another max spot. Who do you go after? Do you go after anyone? Or do you save up for 2020 when the free agent class looks terrible?
No, see, that's the thing. That's what they need to figure out. I mean, obviously, the this is not going to happen, but they should try to make a play for Kawhi. Everyone should. Everyone with money should try to go for Kawhi.
No, he's not. But Kawhi's staying in Toronto or going to one of the LA teams, I think.
I agree with that. I agree with that, but it's worth a shot at the very least.
Sure. Call his agent and they'll hang up on you, but sure.
Fine. But then maybe Jimmy Butler is interesting.
Yeah.
Jimmy Butler is like the one guy on that big UFA's list.
But if we're talking about team chemistry, how are you pitching Jimmy Butler?
Because Jimmy Butler, I get what you're saying here. Jimmy Butler was awful in Minnesota.
Right.
And he had a few issues in Chicago. I'm not going to deny that. Right. But at the same time, Chicago's not a great place for stars or youngsters. Let's just be honest. Yeah, they don't have a great culture. I mean, hashtag mutiny. That's just not a great organization. And we saw with Philadelphia that he came in and, you know, after some initial hurdles, like, really accepted this team. Like, he's best buds with Embiid, it seems. Like, he's responding to players who play hard. And where the organization takes things seriously. Like, Minnesota waffled. Like, they didn't know what they wanted. They gave Karl Towns and Andrew Wiggins just free reign. Like, Jimmy didn't respect that.
Yeah.
In Brooklyn, there's a culture.
Yeah.
Like, that. It's a smart organization. They're serious about winning. They are serious about becoming a major player.
Mm-hmm.
I think they would have a very grown-up talk with Jimmy about, here's what you can expect. Here's what your role would be. Here's what we're going to try to accomplish. And I think Jimmy will respond to that. Whereas Kyrie, like, you can get him to buy in, but then 2 seconds later, he can change his damn mind, because unlike Jimmy, who's very, like, set in his ways, Kyrie, as a person, is a very fluid concept. You don't know what you're getting.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the other thing to keep in mind is if KD and Kyrie really do want to play together, the Knicks are right up the road. And if the Nets are in position to get those guys and turn them down and say, no, we'll stick with D'Angelo, and sure, we'll get Jimmy Butler or Tobias Harris or whoever.
Right.
That could backfire in a big way if KD comes back and is anything close to his former self.
Right.
So my guess right now would be that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant both go to the Nets.
All right, I think both of them could go to the Knicks.
I could see it.
And I could see that going really badly.
I mean, I could too, because it's the Knicks.
Right, but look, I get what you're saying. You have to swing. Like, your point is you need to swing for something. I don't disagree with that, but you also have to gauge whether a swing is too big. You also have to really look at a situation and ask yourself, is this gamble just too big of a gamble? Like, you don't go to Vegas with money you don't have. Would you? You go to Vegas with a budget, like the money you can afford to miss out on. That's theoretically, that's what you should do,
right?
Yeah, but you know, you catch my drift here.
Yeah, but I mean, did Masai Ujiri just do that with Kawhi?
I mean, I get the Kawhi had the quad issue.
Yeah.
I do, but that's not an Achilles tear.
I know, but like these are, you're not gambling on what, if you have two, we don't know what Kevin Durant, maybe he's not a top five player. Maybe he's closer to top 10 or 15. Maybe Kyrie right now is top 10 or like closer to top 15 than top 10. If you still have two top 15 players saying we will sign 4-year deals with your organization, we will give you the star power that you lack. Mm-hmm. I get it. Like if this was NBA 2K, you do that deal in a second, right? But you're right. Like the chemistry thing really is a factor here.
Right. Did you just bring up 2K?
Well,
I get, no, I'm kidding. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, like on paper value, this mm-hmm. is a no-brainer. But you're right. There are human elements that you have to factor in here. I just think like the quality of star power we're talking about here. This is not maxing out Tobias Harris. I have confidence that Kevin Durant, even if he isn't the player he was before the injury, I still have confidence that that player is going to be worth a max contract once
then maybe that's the discussion. Maybe that's the discussion we should be having. Because when I said that there's a risk that Durant's never going to be the same, I wasn't talking about him being a top 10, top 15 player. Because like you just said, that's a damn good player. If you're top 10 or top 15 in the league, yeah, of course. If I had a guarantee that Kevin Durant would come back and be a top 15 player, yeah, then absolutely. Then there's no gamble about this. Then I do it. Mm-hmm. I do it immediately if I'm the Nets.
Yeah.
But what if he comes back and he's Rudy Gay 2.0?
Rudy Gay was surprisingly productive this past season. I will have no Rudy Gay slander. He is a
I like Rudy Gay, but you know what I mean. He was What if he's instead of like a top 5 player or a top 10, top 15 player, what if he's then a top 45 player?
Well, so here's the one thing working in the Nets' favor with regard to Durant. Martin O'Malley is the guy who did his surgery. Mm-hmm. He is the team physician for the Nets.
Yeah, so he has more insight than anyone else.
Correct. And he's the guy who operated when KD had the foot injury a couple years ago. He's the one who operated on KD's foot, too.
Yeah. That obviously gives them an advantage. I don't disagree with that, but you know, doing the surgery and seeing how responsive rehab is, those are two different things. My entire point can be summed up in this. There are risks that you take and there are risks that you don't. Personally, if I'm the Nets, knowing that I went through that entire, you know, dumb trade with Boston in 2013, how much I struggled to come back to respectability, I at least have to play this cautiously.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair.
And if they end up with Irving and Durant and it works out, great. But I see a world wherein they get both and it certainly does not turn up great.
Yeah. Well, since we're in the Atlantic Division more, let's just go right to the Sixers guys too, because I think the Nets are frankly one of the biggest threats to steal either one of them, especially Tobias Harris. There's been a lot of reports. I mean, Tobias is from the area. Been a lot of reports that there is mutual interest between the two. I wrote about this at Forbes the other day, but you know the market for Tobias in particular is starting to close a little bit because Utah gets Mike Conley. Now they can't create a max slot. The Pacers get TJ Warren, who plays a similar position. They can still get a max, but it's tight, and they still have a bunch of other free agents, and they're apparently going to be going after Ricky Rubio. So it seems like they're just going to kind of divide up the rest of their cap space. I don't think they're going to go after a max guy. So the market is quickly thinning for both of them. It's basically the LA teams, the New York teams, Sacramento and Dallas maybe. What do you see happening with the Harris and Butler?
I think they stay.
God, I hope you're right.
Yep. Well, I think they stay. So you know, I just talked about Jimmy and how he responded to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Like on the surface, I think he appreciates that. I think, you know, the whole Minnesota ordeal and him getting away from Chicago, I think he's trying to figure out who he's going to be for the remainder of his career, and he's going to be 30 this year. So I think for him, he wants some stability now. Yeah. And he came on big late in the year for Philly. He wasn't great initially, but I think he had to feel his way through.
Yeah.
Obviously, his stat line does not reflect his quality. I mean, his stats were a lot worse than he is as a player.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just knock on wood that this doesn't happen, but if Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris, like all three of them went down and missed, you know, considerable amount of time, you would absolutely be able to rely on Butler to average like 25, 5, and 5 with great defense. So, yeah, like, he is, in terms of talent and production, just not with the Sixers, a superstar, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And his antics in Minnesota just kind of made us all forget how good he was because, oh, LOL, Jimmy is upset with Towns. He's fantastic. He's absolutely fantastic. Harris, you know, all-star caliber player. He really struggled at the end of that year with Philly. So I think he's got a chip on his shoulder for next year.
Yeah.
I could totally see those two guys thing.
I'm getting nervous. I mean, I've flipped back and forth about who I'm more nervous about leaving. At first, it was... during the season, it was Jimmy. Then it was Tobias after the season. And now I'm kind of flipping back to Jimmy just because the market for Tobias is closing off a little bit. You know, especially if the Nets get Kyrie and KD, they're out on Tobias. I don't think either one of those guys goes to the Knicks, because why would you at that point? So then it's the LA teams, basically. And the Clippers very clearly did not want to max out Tobias. I don't think he makes sense next to LeBron and Anthony Davis either. So, you know, maybe he goes to Sacramento or Dallas, but I doubt it.
Yeah, but why would you go to, like, Sacramento? If you've been with the Sixers and you can make like a deep playoff run,
right?
Like Dallas is sort of understandable.
Yeah,
I could see that one, but no, it seems like Philly is just in a position where they can make a lot of noise. Right. I think that counts for something.
Yeah, and I mean, part of me wonders how much, you know, all of the leaked interest from other teams is just their agents trying to drive up a market, trying to take advantage of an inexperienced front office that caves very easily. And, you know, maybe they think like, oh man, we're in danger of losing Tobias. We are going to try to offer him like 5 years, 160, but I guess we just have to give him the 5 years full 190 max. Oh, well,
yeah,
it wouldn't shock me if that's part of this. So I do think Tobias ultimately stays. Jimmy, I'm legit torn between him staying or going to the Lakers. I think there's been a lot, you know, Arash Merkazi of the Los Angeles Times last month, before the Anthony Davis deal, said if they gave him a max, he would go there. The Lakers still have work to do to get a max slot. We've covered this before, but the Anthony Davis deal, they're still working to expand the parameters of it, according to Woj and Bobby Marks. And if they can find, ideally what would happen is they get the Hawks to take on Mo Wagner, Isaac Bonga, and Jamario Jones. You partially guarantee part of that contract, and then, you know, throw in a second round pick or something, or the Hawks throw in, like, they would have to throw in a little bit of cash to make it legal. But that way, the Lakers would have room for a third max slot. They could get Jimmy in there. He makes a lot of sense there, but, I mean, I do think, like, the Sixers have to be looking, you know, seeing Boston fall apart. Boston's going to take a big step back. Depending where Kawhi goes, if Kawhi leaves, the Raptors very well could just start blowing it up. So really, your top competition at that point is Milwaukee and Indiana, maybe, depending on the changes they make this, you know, this offseason. And we'll see what happens with Depot. They said he's going to miss the first part of the year, but knock on wood, he'll be healthy and back to his old form by the time the playoffs start. The Nets will possibly be there, depending on what they do, but... yeah, I mean, I got to think the Sixers management right now is thinking, man, I know if we run it back, we're going to pay an absurd luxury tax bill starting next season once we give Ben Simmons a max extension as well. But, like, our window is wide open right now. We have a really, really, really good chance to make at least the Eastern Conference Finals, possibly the Finals, possibly win the whole damn thing.
I mean, yeah. And obviously there are ways to get around the whole Ben Simmons thing. If you move him for a rookie contract that has more rookie years on it, but I mean, who would that be in terms of like equal value and influence?
Right, right. Yeah, it's not so, gonna happen.
No. But I'm saying there are ways out of it
if it needs
to be. But yeah, in terms of Jimmy Butler and the Lakers, I'm fairly certain Butler was one of the guys rumored to not wanting to play with LeBron, though.
Yep, that was... so in Woj's... I've gone back to this many times.
Of course you have.
Well, I had, you know, I've been writing these like free agent sliders for Fanside and such, and so in Woj's piece, when he first requested the trade from Minnesota last fall, there was an excerpt that said he didn't want to play second fiddle to LeBron. That has since been removed. And I think it happened pretty shortly after it first went live, but if you like Google that, you know, Google that article, and then like there's an excerpt from like, you know, Silver Screen and Roll and like LakersNation.com or whatever, like I'll have this excerpt pulled out. Bleacher Report had it too. I'll have this excerpt pulled out that no longer exists. So I think it's kind of, I know Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report reported last August, I want to say, mm-hmm. that Jimmy would be open to playing with LeBron. But it's a fair point. Does he want to play second or even third fiddle now to LeBron and Anthony Davis? Or does he see this as the opportunity to form, you know, a great big three that would have a real chance in the West? I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, so that would be a big three, but if he stayed in Philly, it would be a big four.
Right.
In a weaker conference. Yeah. I mean, to me, that just seems obvious. Like, if you're competitive and you want to win.
Yeah, and the fact they can offer him $50 million more than anyone else doesn't hurt.
Doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty much in on both Harris and Butler staying in Philadelphia.
From your lips to God ears, my friend.
Yep.
Let's go to the big name now, Kawhi Leonard. It sounds like, so he turned down his player option the other day. No surprise there. It made no sense for him to opt in. Even if he does a 1+, he does a 1+1 in Toronto, he's still making more money than he would have. His player option was $21.3 million. I believe his max salary is $32.7 million. He's not costing himself $11 million. So no one freak out if you're a Raptors fan. You're like, oh my God, what does it mean? It means nothing.
It would have been breaking news had he not done it.
right. Yes, it would have been. And he would have needed to fire his agent because that would have been terrible.
Right.
So we've talked about it before, but I think the most realistic options are the Raptors and the Clippers.
Yep.
If he stays with the Raptors, Mort, do you think he's willing to take a full 5-year deal, or do you think the 1+1 makes the most sense for him?
Well, I think the 1+1 is just the most logical way of doing it. I mean, we talked about it a couple weeks back. You know, Gasol is getting up there. Mike Conley's Kyle Lowry is
getting up there technically.
Everyone is getting up there.
Yeah.
But no, those two guys are getting up there in age, so they're still productive. Obviously, otherwise they wouldn't have won the damn championship.
Right.
But just giving them one more go. And to see if they can squeeze out some production, like that would also give Kawhi a chance to like look at how they age, and maybe, you know, Gasol and Lowry come back as train wrecks next year. I don't think so necessarily, mm-hmm. but like that could happen. And if so, that's just easier on Kawhi and going, oh, okay, so I gave it 2 years in Toronto. Like I wanted to see if I could repeat. My teammates are virtually dust now, so I can't, which allows me to sign elsewhere.
Right.
And I just wrote a piece for Forbes where you did the free agency preview as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I had the Clippers, and in 650 or so words, I more or less just summed it up like, for the Clippers, Kawhi or bust. Like, and not bust in that sense. I don't think they should go. If Kawhi stays in Toronto, I don't necessarily think that the Clippers should go out and spend a ton of money on, you know, secondary guys.
Right.
Because that would just be ridiculous. Then they could roll it over for next year because Danilo Gallinari's contract is coming off the books next year.
Yep.
And then Kawhi Leonard would be available again.
Correct.
And also, like, if Kawhi is on the you know, the free agency market next year, that class suddenly becomes a lot better.
Yeah. That's very true.
That's something we need to consider. The quad issue that we really don't know a whole lot about. Let's just be honest about that. You know,
right.
One thing is what's been reported, another is what's going on behind the scenes. We don't know the status about Kawhi Leonard's quad moving forward in terms of like long-term consequences or risks or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think his decision is going to be based on like 80% of that.
Yeah.
And as such, his decision is probably going to rely so heavily on intel that we just do not have.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really don't know. Maybe he's being told that quad can be an issue that lasts for the remainder of his career. Maybe he'll never, ever break 70 games played in the season again. And in that case, maybe it's time to just get bank and like stay in Toronto and get as much guaranteed money as you can. I don't know. We don't know.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, I think the quad issue is the only reason he might consider taking a longer deal, because otherwise, yes, like the Raptors are old. All of them become free agents next summer. They'll have a lot of flexibility, but that only means so much. But having seen, I mean, knowing that you're dealing with a quad issue already and that you had the, you know, load management your way, you're through the regular season and you were still basically playing on one leg for the second half of the playoffs this year. And then, you know, watching Kevin Durant go, he had a front row seat to Kevin Durant tearing his Achilles and to Klay Thompson tearing his ACL. And yes, those guys are still both going to get max contracts this summer, but, you know, it's just, it takes one freak. For Klay, it was a dunk. He just went up for a dunk and landed weird. You know how many, like, it's one routine play. Kevin Durant just pivoted. Yeah. He didn't do anything. He was just dribbling and pivoted. I mean, so I think for that reason, I think he wants the long-term contract this summer, and that's why I think he goes to the Clippers.
I could see that. I think with Kawhi, everything is in play in between those two. I mean, he could even sign with the Clippers on a short-term deal as well.
Yeah.
Like, he could do so many different things. I just think it's down to the Clippers and Raptors, and that's basically all we know at this point.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't think the Lakers are in play for Kawhi Leonard. Sorry, Lakers fans. It's just...
Yeah, that would surprise the hell out of me, too. If he is, though, and if it somehow ends up like a... Then we need to have a different discussion. Like, if he ends up with the Lakers, has that been the greatest job ever done by a completely incompetent GM?
Right, like, there would just be no justice in the world if the Lakers pooped all over themselves for 3 years and still walked into LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Kawhi Leonard. It would just,
exactly. Like that, be a then, hate crime. Then we should just cancel the Executive of the Year Award.
Right. Well, see, that's what I'm thinking. I wonder if the Sixers, having seen the Lakers' incompetence work out so well for them, they're like, let's try that route.
Well, I mean, look, the Bulls have been ahead of you for centuries.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, let's finish up today with Kemba Walker, since you mentioned the Mark Stein tweet earlier about the Celtics emerging as a potential dark horse for him. So the Hornets can now offer him, because he made the third team All-NBA, they can offer him the Supermax. It's 5 years, $221 million. Other teams are limited to 4 years, $140.6 million. So this is an $80 million difference.
I swear. Kemba, if you're listening, and if you sign the $221 million contract with the Hornets, just can you settle for 220 and just give us the one? Please? Just the one, man. I'll be set for life.
I think anyone who... Look, I'm not going to tell him not to take that money, right? Like, if they offer him that, I think you almost have to take it. But I think it's
almost a quarter of $1 billion. Yes, yeah.
But I think Kemba, it's franchise
listen
suicide.
To me. Take the money. Take the money. Don't. I mean, look. You love the Hornets. You love this. You love the city of Charlotte. They love you.
Yep.
Go get that bank, man. You're not going to get that in Boston.
No.
That's like. Don't worry about it. Go get that money. I mean, yeah, we're going to ridicule your team, not for you, but I mean for the next many years because of the way they've structured their cap. Yep. That's not on you. You're nice. It's good. Go get that money.
Yeah, I mean, that's franchise suicide for the Hornets if they offer him that much money.
It is. It absolutely is. But, I mean, hey, you know what? For Kemba, I love Kemba. So I'm willing to prioritize Kemba over the actual Hornets.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It would make me very happy if he got paid that much money. That would be awesome. It would just be...
And especially if he dropped off just, you know, $1 million of those to this podcast. Just,
right. Yeah, no, they would probably, when they change the Supermax in the next CBA, they would call it, like, the Walker paradigm as to why they have to change it. Because they're like, no, this guy...
Kemba rule.
Yeah, this guy should not have ever gotten a Supermax. It's just, it's so detrimental to team building. But
right.
Yeah, I think that's the question first is, do the Hornets offer the Supermax? And I, especially after Kemba came out and said, yeah, sure, why not? I would take less to stay here. That makes me think they probably don't, or at least not at first.
No. So we agree that just because you can offer $221 million mm-hmm. and there's an $80 million difference, you don't necessarily have to go from, you know, below 80 million and then up to 221. Like you can offer him 200 straight.
Yeah, or even just do the normal 5-year 189.7 that
exactly. Yeah. But like you can find a figure in between those two.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. So maybe you just give him a clean 5-year 200.
Yeah.
And that's like, again, that's not going to make a big dent. I get it. But it's 21 million off.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, because the problem with the Hornets is they just don't have, if you're committing that kind of money to a guy, ideally you have the core to build around him already. And so, you know, you have a nice young, cheap core who, fine, like you're set already, but they don't have that. They have...
Are you saying Michael Kidd-Gilchrist isn't absolutely fantastic?
I'm saying they have three expirings in MKG, Marvin Williams, and Bismack Biyombo that all come off the books after this year.
This is going to be Bismack's year, though.
Which, in theory, gives them some flexibility. But if they supermax Kemba, I think he would earn $41 million already in 2020. Batum has a $27 million player option that there is no way he will decline. So that's $70 million. Cody Zeller's at $15.4 in 2020. That's $85 million. You still got cheap team options on Malik Monk, Miles Bridges, and then PJ Washington, who they picked this year.
Mm-hmm.
There goes your cap space, basically. You'll have a little bit of room to work with, but they're still going to be miles away. I mean, with Kemba on that kind of a contract, they're never going to make it past... Maybe, just by a sheer miracle, they make it to the Eastern Conference Finals one year. But they will never be championship contenders. They will probably just be around 500 first-round playoff knockout fodder for the length of that contract. Which, if they're cool with that, that's fine. I'm not going to make fun of them. It's just, they know what they're signing up for.
If the Hornets make the Eastern Conference Finals, that contract is a win.
Yeah.
Like, everything's a win.
I don't think they will, but maybe.
No. That was kind of my point there.
Yeah.
I think they just have us all fooled. Like, they've gone out and spent all these money on subpar players, and then this year starts, and they're suddenly not so subpar. They've just been biding their time. I'm on to you, Nicholas Batum, for averaging 9 points this season. I don't think that's true. I don't believe that stat is correct. I think you're just trying to fool us.
Just slow rolling until they're going to win 65 games.
Absolutely.
This year.
Yeah. No, but it's a problem, and I think when they re-signed Batum, like obviously when it happened, you know that there was discussions about, you know, is this a bad deal? And most were like, yeah, it's a bad deal, but it wasn't universally hated like it is now.
Yeah.
And I think because he just had such a drastic decline.
Right.
And like, what is he, 30? He's really young.
Yeah. Well, the problem with, that was the summer of 2016, was it not?
I believe it was, yes.
The problem, much as it was for pretty much every contract that summer, wasn't necessarily the total value of it. It was the number of years. Like, if you gave him 4 years, $125 million. At least he's off your books after this year.
Yeah,
or, you know,
it was 5 years, $120 million.
Yeah, that's gross. It's the 5 years that killed you.
Yeah,
and I know they thought they were locking into a discount at the time, but this is really the last summer. I guess next summer with the 5 year deals coming off the books, but this is the last summer where the big mistakes of 2016. Will be affecting teams, and we just saw two of them in Bazemore and Turner get traded for each other yesterday. But yeah, I think that's really the big story of this summer is, did teams learn from that? Did they know? And, you know, we'll talk about the Knicks probably next time at this point.
Yeah.
If the Knicks strike out, did they learn from the teams in 2016? Or are they going to give four-year deals to, you know, that second and third tier of right. free agents?
Well, let's hope not. But here, just to wrap up your thoughts on 2016, for the Hornets, it wasn't just Nick Batum.
Right.
Obviously, he was signed by Orlando back then. But Bismack Biyombo is his 2016 contract. Yep. Marvin Williams was his 2016 contract. Cody Seller was a 2016 contract.
Man.
They splurged at the wrong time. I mean, obviously, you know, Bismack was traded for, so that's a different situation. Yeah. I think that to put it back on the Knicks, I mean, I think they are smarter at this point. I think 2016 just had such a ripple effect on the league.
Right.
That everyone is talking about it. Like, yeah. It's not something they talk about publicly because, you know, I've written several articles about the 2016 summer and, like, just scaled it back and kind of looked at it. Very, very few GMs speak openly about 2016. It's almost like it's a black mark on the league. I think it's something that's, like, maybe in 10 years' time, that's something, like, people open up about.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of these guys are still on the books.
So right, I don't think, like, right.
You can talk about it. But, yeah. I mean, I would love to get a GM on this podcast at some point again and just talk about, like, the 2016 summer.
Hey, Mitch, what were you thinking when you offered Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov $136 million on the first day of free agency?
Who's now, summer? You know, the GM of the Hornets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So if anything, I would hope he learned the lesson. But
yeah,
we'll see. I do like the idea of Kemba in Boston, though. He would be a nice fit there. And
it would be interesting as well because, like, we just talked about all the chemistry issues with Kyrie.
Yeah.
Could you imagine Kemba coming in and just being, like, the emotional leader and just like the perfect locker room guy, and the Celtics are just like championship favorites by March.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that would just put it into such tremendous contrast.
Meanwhile, the Nets fall apart.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll be back later this week. We'll talk about the top free agents who we didn't hit on today, namely Al Horford, Nick Vucevic, bunch of other, the Bojan Bogdanovic. We talked a little Nitko, but we'll go more into them. So stay tuned. We'll otherwise be on the lookout for any major free agent rumors or, God forbid, another blockbuster trade this week. But yeah, follow us on the NBA Twitter, at the NBA Pod on Twitter. We'll have all of our episodes posted there. It's going to be a busy couple weeks for us. You can also find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are hosted. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. It would really help us out. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Zaporik, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. You know what? I'm actually going back on the whole, you know, just give us $1 million, Kemba. I think the NBA should just give us, like, the league minimum, like the rookie minimum, just for 1 year.
Yep.
It's fine. I'll settle.
You'll settle for $897,000?
Yeah. Yeah.
How charitable. I'll settle. How charitable.
Take care, man.
You too.